It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. As more and more content companies launch online streaming platforms, the need for new original productions grows. Pittsburgh has seen the benefit of the streaming wars firsthand with productions like Netflix's Mindhunter, as well as bigger feature films. But Don Keyser says there could be a way for more to come this way if Pennsylvania expanded its film tax credit program. Don is the director of the Pittsburgh Film Office. She joins us now. Don, welcome to the Confluence.
Thank you for having me.
This region has long been a part of the film industry. I'm back from the first Nickelodeon on Smithfield Street to serving as a production location for some big-time movies, whether it was The Dark Knight Rises, Perks of Being a Wallflower, and many others. Is that unique for a city our size, even a Rust Belt city our size?
I think it is. And I think it's something Pittsburgh and the southwestern Pennsylvania region should be very proud of. I mean, we built this industry here much like we built the world, if you'll take the analogy back to the steel industry. But we've been making movies here since 1914. Warner Brothers are from Lawrence County. Like, it all ties back, but we've really seen it grown tremendously over the last 14 years with the inception of the Pennsylvania Film Tax Credit Program.
Some studios, including Disney, aren't bringing their movies or their money to Pittsburgh. You've said it's partially due with that film tax credit from the state that you just alluded to. What are we doing or not doing that in your mind is limiting our potential?
Our program is woefully underfunded and oversubscribed. We have more work than our program can currently handle. The way to fix it is to increase our film tax credit program so that we're far more competitive. This program, when we started it 14 years ago, we were the third state that joined into having some sort of incentive for the film industry. There's now 35 states, not to mention all the other countries that are in this business, because the film industry is a business. They come in, they hire local people, they use local vendors, and they spend a lot of money. We'd like to see that continue. In order to make that continue, we need the film tax credits to be a much stronger and larger program. We're capped at $70 million. This year alone, we needed $125 million in tax credits to keep the work that wanted to be in southwestern Pennsylvania. That was 13 feature films, 6 television series that wanted to be here just this year alone.
And how many did you have to say no to?
We said no to 11 of the features and all of the television series.
Is that painful?
Oh, it's more than painful. I was trained in sales, so to be putting out a close for business sign for southwestern Pennsylvania is horrific. If you look at that, the $125 million tax credit brings in $500 million, $500 million in spend. It just seems ridiculous at a time when our Commonwealth needs new revenue coming in, and it's an easy way to get it. And the industry wants to be here. We have some of the most talented crew in the world. We have the most diversity of locations. We're missing a beach in a desert, but we can send them up to Erie for that. Mm-hmm. And they want to come. And once they're here, they want to come back.
Who's doing it better? What cities are we usually competing with for big-time films?
As frightening as it is, it's Atlanta, Georgia. The state of Georgia has a 30% uncapped credit. 15 years ago, they were the exact same size industry-wise as Pittsburgh. They had about 1,000 local crew. They were lucky to get one or two shows a year. They now have a $6 billion film industry in the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. New York's huge, of course. They have a $490 million tax credit. Chicago comes in as well, and we're still losing work to Canada. Canada has a great incentive program, plus with the exchange rate, how it varies, it just depends. But people want to be in Pittsburgh. They want to be in southwestern Pennsylvania versus the eastern side of the state. We're 30% cheaper, a lot easier to do work here, and people get excited when they get to come to Pittsburgh.
You mentioned the quality of the workers, but are unions ever an issue with some producers?
Not in Pittsburgh. We have an incredibly talented crew. They work really hard. They're known for their work ethic, much like most of our people in southwestern Pennsylvania are known for our work ethic. And they're experienced. We've been making movies here forever. We really credit 1968 with really kicking off the commercial industry as we know it today. Silence of the Lambs, that was Night of the Living Dead, right? 1968. 1990 is when we saw Silence of the Lambs, one of the two best pictures that ever shot in southwestern Pennsylvania. First one's Deer Hunter, second one's Silence. I answered your question before you ask it. And with Silence, that actually started the Pittsburgh Film Office, which is turning 30 in January.
30 already.
30, and I've been here 25 years.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. Our guest is the director of the Pittsburgh Film Office, Don Keyser. Don, there is a bill in the legislature by Senator Tom Killian of Chester and Delaware counties that would increase the tax credit, film tax credit, to $125 million. Is that even enough?
No. But we'd take it. This year alone, because I told you we had 13 features and 6 television series, that totaled $656 million. And I throw these numbers around, and they're huge numbers. And if they were in our private bank accounts, we'd all be sitting on a beach somewhere. But to keep that $650 million worth of work, we needed $127 million just in Pittsburgh. Ideally, we'd uncap the credit in Pennsylvania. But there seems to be some issues with our constitution and being able to do that. So we've been asking this year to take it to $150.
Right. So explain what you mean by the cap.
We have $70 million that's allocated to film tax credits for this fiscal year. That's July 1 to June 30th. 3 weeks into July, all $70 million of the film tax credit were allocated. Pennsylvania is fortunate in that we have 2 production centers. We make a lot of this product both in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. Most states only have 1 production center. So $70 million doesn't go far enough when you have 2 very successful production centers. Pittsburgh is really busy right now, as is Philadelphia. So the program's woefully underfunded.
So your budget is on a July-June fiscal year?
The film tax credit budget is July 1 to June 30.
So with people sort of knocking on your doors, how quickly is your dance card filled up?
Our dance card was filled up prior to the start of the fiscal year. They start knocking on the doors in spring prior to the July 1 start date to find out where we are, where we think we're going to be. And we never know the allocation of the credit until the budget's finalized, which causes way too many question marks. This tax credit program wasn't just about giving money to the film industry. That's not how this works. It was about investing in building an industry here in southwestern Pennsylvania. In order to be able to do that, you have to have a certainty that this program exists. You'd see the infrastructure being built. You'd see vendors coming in, camera, sound stages being built, all of those things that would actually add more to the spend that's happening in southwestern PA. But with the question mark on if we have a tax credit, how much is the tax credit? How long it will last? We're not getting those investments because they can't count on Pennsylvania to still be open for business for this very viable economic generator every single year.
I believe part of the credit is a requirement to spend a certain percentage here in Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
The film tax credit is probably the most looked at program by the auditors and everyone else. We require an audit. You must spend 60% of your budget in Pennsylvania on Pennsylvania qualified businesses. They have to be Pennsylvania businesses.
Would lessening that, loosening that help, or the demand's already there?
Oh, no, we have the demand. And we have one of the most stringent requirements of any of the states. 60% of your entire budget's a very high bar, and we get people to meet it, and they're spending more of their money locally here in southwestern PA and in all of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Don, 2 high-profile productions just wrapped up here. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, starring Denzel Washington, and the Lionsgate show Manhunt Lone Wolf. 2 more big projects from Amazon Netflix are coming, I believe. I mean, that's 4 big teams here all around the same time. Is that happening often?
Yes. We're usually running between 5 and 7 projects, usually around 5 at a time. We have crew enough to do 4 full shows, so sometimes we're bleeding over into the next one, but it's all working. And our crew is working full-time year-round, as are our businesses, so it's great. Mm-hmm. And yes, Amazon's here right now with I'm Your Woman, starring Rachel Brosnahan, also known as the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, for those of you who may not recognize the name. They start filming in about a week. Sweet Girl starts with Jason Momoa in November. That's the Netflix feature. Sony will be back in January. It's going to be another good year for Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania and southwestern PA. It could be a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm. You've been courting high-profile productions for several years, 25 years at the office, you said, right? And the office is 30 years. Has the office's approach changed with the advent of more streaming platforms seeking more content?
Well, what we've always worked on is client retention, if you will, is keeping them here and wanting them to want to come back. This will be the 5th show we've done with Netflix. It's the 4th show we've done with Amazon, and really just continuing to build upon those relationships. It's a lot easier sell anymore than it used to be prior to the film tax credits.
Right.
People are calling us far more than we're calling them now, which is a nice thing to have.
So what happened to all those marketing skills that you started out with? You don't need them or what?
Oh, we still use the marketing skills. We still got to tell them all about some of the opportunities they may not know about that exist. We represent 10 counties. Mm-hmm. So we're now working on getting them further afield. They're out in Washington County. The Netflix show I Am Not Okay With This shot in Brownsville in Fayette County. They plan on coming back with seasons 2 and 3 and spending more time in Brownsville. So we're getting them to expand what they're looking at, not just staying centered here in Allegheny County in the city of Pittsburgh.
Do you have a preference booking series over feature films?
My goal when I got here is that we'd get one television series. I'm thrilled with the work we have from TV. TV's great because it's here for a longer period of time.
Right.
They promote from within, and they do internal workforce training because usually these go for 6 to 9 months. So you get to know the people, you move them up the ranks, you promote them. So our crew is getting more experience. We're able to hire more people, and we're continuing to grow this sector of the economy in southwestern PA.
And we have just about a minute left. When you have to say no, when you have to put, businesses closed on that door, do you tell the production companies, you know, can you get your ass in a little sooner because the budget goes quickly?
No. A lot of times we try, but it's really hard for me to say no, and it's really hard to tell these companies that we don't have the tax credits. We work hand in hand with the state, and they get to make these final decisions. If I had the final decision, all the work would be in Pittsburgh. None of it would be in Philly. They could come over here and work, but we want to keep the work for our people. But the program needs to be expanded, and you'd see the results of it throughout the economy in southwestern PA.
Okay, just a couple sentences. What are you looking forward to in the upcoming months and ahead?
Oh, it's going to be a good year, and we're going to celebrate a lot with the 30th anniversary, and we have Lights, Glamour, Action, of course, on February 8th. It's a great event, and it's the 20th anniversary of that party, and it's going to be a good year for the film industry. I'm looking forward to making it a great year.
And a crew that's arriving very soon?
Crew lives here. So,
a production crew that's coming in.
Well, I'm Your Woman starts next week, and Sweet Girl starts in November, so they're here and working, and we're going to see them all running around town soon.
Don Keyser is the director of the Pittsburgh Film Office. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's what's trending in Pittsburgh. I'm Kathleen Davis. The Steel City is the pilot site for a new grocery delivery service from Walmart. This program sets itself apart from other services by dropping goods directly into the customer's fridge, even if they aren't home. And one of Pennsylvania's prisons is adopting a Scandinavian approach to corrections techniques. A housing unit at SCI Chester outside of Philadelphia will be retrofit with a rehabilitation-focused Nordic influence. Each inmate will be in a single cell, and there will be special reading areas. Find more top news at WESA.FM.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. A new exhibit at the Andy Warhol Museum explores its namesake's relationship with his religious roots in Pittsburgh. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll reports on Andy Warhol Revelation.
St. John Chrysostom Byzantine Catholic Church is a landmark in Lower Greenfield. Its yellow brick facade, topped with 3 gilded crosses, overlooks the Parkway East. St. John's is also the church a kid named Andy Warhol attended with his family in the 1930s and 40s. Before the Parkway was built, the working-class Warholas walked down the wooded hillside from their row house on Dawson Street in South Oakland. We think of Andy Warhol as the guy who painted soup cans and candy-colored portraits of Marilyn Monroe and courted celebrities on Manhattan's social scene. Not as a Pittsburgh boy, let alone a Catholic, but Catholicism is arguably central to understanding Andy Warhol. At the Warhol Museum exhibit, one of the first things you'll see is a panel from the old icon screen at St. John's, 4 saints with gilded halos.
This is something that Andy as a child would have seen as a young boy going to church with his family.
Jose Diaz, the museum's chief curator, says Catholic iconography influenced how Warhol depicted secular subjects.
So icons are a way to, speak to holy figures, certainly in terms of adoration and prayer. So to take images of Jackie or images of Marilyn and understand that they would speak to the masses, I think that was a tool that I think he would have learned just by observing life in church.
Likewise, Warhol's pioneering technique of creating multiples of the same image, 8 Elvises, 16 Jackie Kennedys. In fine art, endlessly reproducing an image was thought to cheapen it, but just the opposite is true in a religious context, like the prayer cards Warhol grew up with, for which replication enhances devotion. Miranda Lash is curator of contemporary art at the Speed Art Museum in Louisville, Kentucky.
That's how Warhol can operate on two planes at once, in acknowledging industrial level reproduction and spiritual, which he draws from his upbringing.
Few people know that after moving to New York in 1949, Warhol continued going to church until his death in 1987. Catholicism likewise echoed throughout his career, so the exhibit includes family heirlooms like a plastered Jesus that Andy painted as a kid, but it also features a film commissioned by the Catholic Church. The color footage of a California sunset was made for the Vatican's pavilion at the 1968 World's Fair in San Antonio, says University of Pittsburgh art professor Alex Taylor.
And the idea of let there be light being, you know, this very fundamental idea for the Christian faith, I think is something that Warhol is playing with.
The soundtrack of the seldom seen film features Warhol associate and Velvet Underground singer Nico reciting poetry. Taylor says Sunset 2 finds Warhol blurring the lines between sacred and secular.
You know, a sunset is the kind of preeminent sort of kitsch image as well. And so again, you see Warhol moving between the two.
Other highlights include some of Warhol's final works based on The Last Supper. One painting, titled Be a Somebody with a Body, layers a ghostly outline of Christ over an image of a buff dude from a bodybuilding ad. Diaz, the curator, views the painting in light of the fact that Warhol was gay, a type of sexuality the Catholic Church still doesn't accept.
So it really talks about the heavenly body, which is the body and blood of Christ, but you've got this idea of like the human body, and you've got this sort of muscular figure here. So there's elements, I think, of desire as well, or queer desire.
So just how devout was Andy Warhol? Warhol's nephew, Donald Warhola, worked briefly for Warhol in the 80s and was altar server at his funeral mass in Pittsburgh. When Warhol attended church later in life, it was often only for a few minutes. But Donald Warhola says his uncle's faith was more than skin deep and expressed in unpublicized acts of charity.
He would go every Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter to the homeless shelter, and he would spend a whole day.
Indeed, it might be Warhol's glamorous public image that makes it so hard to see the influence of Catholicism. Warhola, who's vice president of the Andy Warhol Foundation, says his uncle might have nurtured the dichotomy deliberately.
And I believe that, you know, Uncle Andy kind of created this Andy Warhol persona, and it allowed him to do stuff that he might not feel comfortable doing as Andrew Warhol.
Andy Warhol Revelation opens Sunday. I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Do you need a plant to freshen up your home, office, or dorm? This Saturday, the city of Pittsburgh is clearing out its Grant Street medians to prepare for festive winter plantings. That means lots of tropical plants will need new homes. T. Marcel Newman is the assistant director of the city's Department of Public Works. She's helping organize a free giveaway tomorrow inside the city county building portico. Marcel, welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you.
So I want to say that again, free plants will be available for pickup downtown. Marcel, what kinds of flowers and shrubbery are we talking about?
We're talking about summer plants. There's some elephant ears, some summer flowers. I'm not sure exactly what they are, but they're just for summer.
Can we assume that they're all pretty hardy? They have made it through a very rainy, then very hot, and now very cold Pittsburgh planting season.
Some of them are wind-whipped because they're right in the mediums. Some of the taller shrubbery, again, like the elephant ears and the palms, but the rest of them are in really good shape.
So what is the best protocol then for someone who's coming by, who's interested in plants? What should they do when they arrive?
They should park in a safe place. There'll be parking street parking available. And then line up in queue around 4th Avenue and pick up the plants they desire once they're sorted.
Will the plants be stacked up on the portico in advance, or will crews be digging more up and adding new ones after the event gets going? How will it work?
The contractor will go down and then pick them out little by little. It's not like they're going to have them all there. By 10 o'clock, they're going to keep bringing in until they're all cleared out, the mediums.
How long do you imagine this take in, the contractors?
I imagine 2 to 3 hours, 4 hours. like last year, my experience has been that safety is a big issue. People were literally jumping into the mediums and crossing the streets. So I want to stress that they do not do that. I just want to make sure that it's a safe environment. So we want to stress that they would only be available to pick up from the portico.
Yeah.
Grant. You know, they're only plans. It's, you know, nothing to really stress over, just to make sure that, you know, they're getting there in a safe environment.
Will there be any kind of limit on how many plants someone can take?
I don't want to limit people, but at the same time, I just ask that they be considerate of others. We ask that they do not pick the fall plants that we have in on our Grand Street sidewalks. Those are freshly planted this year for the fall season. So those are off limits. But anything that a contractor picks up and places on a portico is available to anyone, and they can pick and choose which ones they can. They like to have some of them pretty tall. They might want to bring a truck, but some of the smaller ones, they can fit in any car.
Are you surprised at all at how much interest Public Works is getting over this giveaway?
A little bit surprised. I was there last year, and there weren't that many people. But this year, it seems like there's a lot of interest around it.
And so all of this is to make way for winter plantings. What kinds of new plants do people have to look forward to along those medians on Grant Street?
Mostly small Christmas trees. Yeah, holiday decorations and trees. We hope to get them lit up. We're not sure whether we can do that this year.
Is that fun for you and your office, the contractors, to kind of, you know, see what was old become new again?
It is nice to see them. Honestly, they make it such a beautiful difference on Grand Street. At one time, Grand Street was voted one of the most beautiful streets in the nation, and we'd like to keep up that momentum. You know, it's people come in here, visitors, the public, city residents. It's a highly visible area, and we definitely would like to keep that up.
T. Marcel Newman is the assistant director of the city's Department of Public Works. She's helping organize a free tropical plant giveaway tomorrow at 10 a.m. inside the City County Building portico. Marcel, thanks so much for joining us on The Confluence.
Thank you.
Pittsburgh, I'll see you on the portico. I'm Megan Harris. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Defendants who are deemed incompetent to stand trial in Pennsylvania are waiting weeks, even months, in lockups, including county jails, to receive mental health treatment. This despite a lawsuit and a couple of settlements. Joining us in studio is Laura Williams. She is the Chief Deputy Warden of Healthcare Services at the Allegheny County Jail. Welcome to The Confluence, Laura.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Vic Volchek is the legal director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania. Welcome back to the show, Vic.
Good morning.
Vic, let's start with you. Give us an idea of who these defendants are, maybe the variety of charges, and even their mental health status.
Yeah, so these are really the sickest of the sick mentally ill folks. Most of them are floridly psychotic. I mean, the folks you may see on the side of a road talking to themselves, really kind of incoherent. In terms of the charges, a lot of them are there for just stupid stuff related to their mental illness.
Such as?
Just people who scare others, like maybe yelling and because they're hearing voices. So you may have assaults, you may have trespass, you have people taking things from stores, shoplifting and things like that. But you've also got some people who've committed really atrocious, horrific kinds of crimes. So it really spans the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Laura, when the Allegheny County Jail receives defendants who currently are not competent to stand trial, tell us a little bit about the process for housing them.
One of the most important things that we try to do initially in the intake area is provide a comprehensive assessment based on their mental health needs. So they're seen first in intake, and when it's determined whether or not we've got that BC hold or the behavior assessment unit evaluation indicates that they may be committed, we're going to put them on one of our acute mental health units so that we can have a psychiatrist on site who is separate from this evaluation team, do their own separate evaluation, and we can prescribe, diagnose, and treat while they are awaiting their commitment status.
So it's a separate unit. Is it away from the general population?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This issue, at least the legal dispute, dates back 4 years, Vic?
Yeah, actually 4 years ago this month.
Mm-hmm. What did the ACLU, why did the ACLU recently file suit against the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services? I mean, well, the suit was filed then, but why did it originally file that suit?
Yeah, so there's a process in pretty much all states that if you have a person who's incompetent, which means they really don't understand the nature of the charges, they cannot assist in their defense, and under the Constitution, you cannot criminally prosecute somebody who's incompetent. What the court said decades ago is that if there is a belief that an incompetent person could be made competent with a reasonable amount of treatment within a reasonable period of time, you can send them for treatment, and then if they're made competent, they come back and stand trial. If they're not competent, they either have to be released from prison or they can be civilly committed if they're a danger to themselves. Mm-hmm. Or others, and the time it takes to transfer a person from jail, an incompetent person from jail to a mental health facility, should not be more than a week or two.
And says who? The court
the
or
federal
you?
Courts have said. Several federal courts have said that the transfer time should not be more than 14 days. When we started this lawsuit back in 2015, the wait times in certain parts of the state were about 2 years and regularly over a year. So, it's not like it's a close call. This was egregiously unconstitutional, some of the longest waits in the country. So we felt like we had no choice but to file a lawsuit.
Did that wait time shrink from the time that you first filed suit?
It has shrunk dramatically. We are now regularly below a month of people waiting. It's still quite not where they need to be, but it's way better than a year or 2 years.
Laura, what's your experience in length of time of such defendants in the Allegheny County Jail?
I would agree with what Vic shared about the wait times. Allegheny County Jail, we have a little bit different resources than some of the other county jails might have. So we do have an incredible treatment team that is able to assist these individuals. We don't do on-site competency restoration, and that's important to note that. But we do continuously monitor and offer treatment to individuals and see if we can get them to be treatment compliant, which oftentimes has an impact on their level of competency. But we're seeing much lower wait times at this point.
So we've been using the term waiting for treatment. So where would they be receiving the overall treatment to try to get them to be able to be competent to help in their own defense?
Right. So this is something that we've worked hard to change and have succeeded in doing so over the last 4 years. Initially, when we started, everybody who went for competency, what's called competency restoration treatment, went to one of two state hospitals, either Norristown for eastern Pennsylvania or Torrance, which is in Westmoreland County, for the western two-thirds of Pennsylvania. And these are forensic hospitals. And so this is the highest state of security. You got barbed wire, you got locked doors, all of that. We had people in there on shoplifting charges, which makes no sense, especially when you're spending over $900 a day for a bed. And one of the things we've pushed the state to do and the counties to do is to allow people who need this kind of treatment to be able to do it in a community setting. And that's a big reason that the wait times have come down.
Mm-hmm. Laura, tell me about, is your treatment, the treatment that they received at the county jail, is there a process to get them ready when a bed opens at Torrance, for example?
We we talked a little bit earlier about the difference between the competency evaluation as far as treatment goes. We're looking for psychiatric stability, which will oftentimes, for a floridly psychotic person, impact their legal competency status. So our objectives are really to stabilize the person, address their psychiatric illness, usually getting them to be medication compliant and understanding the benefits of that treatment. So we are doing everything that we can to have an intervention to try to divert that person from going to one of the state hospitals to begin with. And if we are able to successfully engage them in treatment, we'll do a recheck with the BAU, and then they may not have to go to one of the behavior assessment unit. Mm-hmm. And then they may not have to go to the state hospital, which also impacts those wait times for other individuals who are looking for a bed.
Right. Is it just not enough beds, Vic?
Yeah, well, that's what it was, and the state has actually added hundreds of beds. Most of them are not at the state hospitals. They have added some beds to the hospitals, but most of them are just opening suitable beds in the community for this patient population.
And how are they making sure that those community facilities are secure? After all, these are defendants, but also have the professional ability to serve and provide services.
That, you know, that's just what the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services does. I mean, they license facilities all across the state, and then you've got medical professionals, medical and correctional professionals that are making decisions about what's an appropriate level of care for an individual. And what you look at is really just how sick they are. A lot of these folks, for instance, our lead plaintiff in the case was a guy who's locked up in the system because he stole peppermint York peppermint patties from a convenience store.
How long?
He ended up spending 3.5 years in the system between waiting for a bed in the Philadelphia County Jail, waiting for a bed in a hospital, and then a year or a year and a half in the hospital. You know, this is something that he shouldn't have gotten any jail time. And think about the resources that went into that, much less the damage that caused to him. So, I mean, the good news is that the system is really functioning much better. Just one point, though, as Laura said, I mean, Allegheny County does provide some services. An awful lot of these more rural counties don't have the resources, and so you have these people that are stuck in jail cells because of their mental illness. They often act out. They will spit on the corrections officer. They will defecate and urinate in their cells, which gets them in trouble, and then they're put into solitary confinement, which just makes things worse. I mean, jails are just not an appropriate place for people who are this mentally ill.
No treatment in solitary confinement, or what?
In a lot of these places, they don't have any kind of mental health treatment. It's really awful.
Our guests on The Confluence are Laura Williams. She's the Chief Deputy Warden for Healthcare Services at the Allegheny County Jail, and Vic Volchek, Legal Director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, which filed suit against the State Department of Human Services to reduce the wait times for defendants to receive mental health treatment. Laura, on average, about how many defendants may be waiting for treatment in Allegheny County Jail?
On any given day, that's going to fluctuate based on our population. So Vic and I were talking earlier that sometimes you see these population spikes. But usually we have a wait list that ranges between 10 to 20.
You have a wait list. I mean, are some of these defendants in other units within the county jail, or where are they waiting to get into?
They're located on one of our mental health units, actively receiving services from our mental health treatment teams.
Okay. Vic, there's been a lot of back and forth, as we talked about, over the last 4 years. There were agreements in early 16, I believe another agreement in 17, that didn't actually resolve the dispute, maybe made things better. And then earlier this year, you went to court again. What is the status of that?
Right. So it's been an uneven process. As I often tell my kids, progress is not linear. So when we filed suit, as I said, wait times were in some cases in excess of 2 years. And right after we filed the lawsuit, we got a settlement, forced DHS to start adding beds and doing some of these other things to make the process more efficient. We started to see wait times come down, and then all of a sudden they went back up. State DHS could not tell us why that was happening. We went back to court again. The second time, what we saw is that as soon as we filed, all of a sudden things improved. And mm-hmm. and then we had a similar situation after the second filing. Things got better, and then they plateaued at about 9 months, which is unacceptable. So we filed again. And since we filed in March, we've seen the wait times come down substantially. So kudos to PA DHS. We are sort of coming to the I hope, coming to a third agreement, which we hope will be filed before the end of the year. But as I said, PADHS is getting close to where they need to be to have a constitutional system, and it's way better than it was when we started 4 years ago.
A note, the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services did not respond to our request to join the conversation. In an earlier statement, they said, quote, "We remain committed to working with the ACLU in reaching our mutual goal of avoiding protracted delays in getting individuals with a mental illness and in need of competency restoration the treatment they need," end quote. Laura, give us an idea about how many mental health professionals are working in the jail or you have contracted with.
We have, I would say, close to 15, if not closer to 20, full-time mental health staff. We have mental health specialists, psychiatric aides, mental health RNs. We have a director of our mental health programs who is, you know, our liaison between so many different entities. And then we partner with AHN to do our mid-levels for the psychiatric providers. So we have NPs, PAs, and MDs who are on site with us. We have coverage on site every single day, which is a luxury that a lot of correctional agencies, as Vic noted, do not have available to them.
Wait, just a few minutes left. Is the answer, I mean, you've been mentioning progress, but is the resolution just a matter of funding? Resources, more beds, more help, more professionals, whether it's at the county level, county jail level or not?
Yeah, I think it is a question of resources. What we've seen, so deinstitutionalization was a very important and necessary thing that started happening decades ago. I mean, people did not need to sit in these state hospitals, and you sent them out into the community, and that money was supposed to follow them into the community, and in some cases it did, and then it dried up, and then all of a sudden it wasn't following. You had a crisis. You had way more people who needed mental health care were not getting it, and what's happened over the last couple of decades is that the criminal justice system has become the de facto mental health safety net. So Laura's got all sorts of people sitting in that jail who don't need to be there, who need treatment, and if they could get it in the community, they would be better off and society would be spending a lot less money to take care of them.
I would agree with that, you know, and we've also seen those trends in substance use as well. So the jails have become the provider of treatment for physical health needs, substance use needs, as well as mental health needs. And the capacity that we have, as well as the resources and funding, we're lucky at Allegheny County Jail, but not everybody is.
You're lucky, but you still need more resources?
I would always say yes to more.
And how would that be used?
With additional treatment, funding, and resources for the patients that we serve or inmates when they're with us.
Vic, do you see a settlement, or were you going to, as you've been making progress in these negotiations, you went to court in March, do you see another settlement? And will that one resolve it?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I do have to say about the Wolf administration, DHS, that they do seem committed to trying to fix this problem. We don't always have that in what we call these big institutional reform cases where you're trying to change, you know, big systems of government, whether it's a police force or a public defender's office or a school. I think they have the commitment. They've finally marshaled the resources. Don't know where they got those. We just want to make sure that they continue to provide those resources. So we've gotten close, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to reach an agreement in the coming months. Then the question will be whether they can maintain it.
Right. In a sentence or two, Laura, are you as optimistic as Vic is?
I am, because though the case was with the state, we've seen at the county level the partnership and communication between the Behavior Assessment Unit, pretrial, DHS, OBH, and the jail has increased greatly.
All right. Laura Williams is the Chief Deputy Warden of Healthcare Services at the Allegheny County Jail. Vic Volchek is the Legal Director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, new research shows that 1 in 6 young people ages 10 to 17 in Pennsylvania is obese. That's well above the national average. We'll discuss what's being done in our region to reduce those numbers and help children lead healthier lives. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance from Julia Zenkovich. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good weekend of good news.